Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to season two of the Learning Well podcast. We're so excited to kick off this season. If you're new to the podcast, we really hope that you find, you know, just a depth of knowledge here that's designed for practitioners. But we also have guests, so we hope that you're kind of encouraged and get some new ideas from our guests and their fresh perspectives. And then, of course, our goal is always to have fun as well. So we want this to be something that you would turn on your way home from work, or maybe when you have some free time. So you're learning something, but it just feels fun and interesting at the same time. So this year, we are very excited to welcome guests from different industries. And one of the greatest things about the L&D industry, at least in my experience, is the willingness and even excitement to share experiences and good conversations. So we'll be having some great discussions on some different topics with various guests throughout the industry. So this year, we're going to kick off with Learning Trends 2023. We kind of love to kick off that way, a brief look back and then more look forward. I have Dr. Zanstra here with me, Jerry, always my favorite co-host. So welcome, Jerry.
Thank you very much for having me, Miriam.
Always fun. And today we're going to look at what we're seeing on the horizon in 2023, some kind of ongoing trends and some very recent trends. So we should probably get to it because we don't have a lot of time and there's a lot of trends out there.
All right, let's go.
So let's first of all just take a really quick look back. Like last year, and for those of you that are interested, we have this in our podcast list. You can go back and look. I forget the exact episode escapes me right now. We'll put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But we looked specifically at learning analytics, things like measuring your return on learning. And we looked at personalized learning, like creating learning paths and using AI in learning and social learning. So I don't know, Jerry, do you feel like progress has been made in the whole measuring learning, return on investment, the thinking that way?
The thing that's risen is interest. Mm. I'm thinking in the last week, I've had conversations with three Fortune 100 companies that are struggling enormously with measuring the impact of their learning and then trying to figure out the return on investment. What is the actual return on investment? And some of these stories are fascinating. These are enormous, complicated firms, right? I mean, they're global firms, and there's some really, really smart people on the learning team.
I was going to say we just assumptions.
It's not a smart thing.
Right?
It's more of a how-to, and it's complex because you have to know what you want to measure. You have to be able to get the data that you need, which oftentimes is coming from outside of the learning team.
Sure,
it might be coming from finance or HR. Sometimes those people aren't giving up their data quite so easily.
Yes, right,
And then you have to be, fairly proficient in math modeling. And let's be honest, most of us didn't do econometric modeling, you know, as part of our learning and development training. So have we made progress in it? Are we better at it? Not that I've seen.
Okay. That's fair, right?
Yeah.
I think it's an ongoing trend that we knew we needed to keep pushing.
It is, the demand for is bigger. And the pressure. The most recent conversation I had just 2 days ago was really a new CLO in a ginormous multinational company. Saying we have to do this. She was brand new to her role and saying we absolutely have to do this. We don't know how to do this, but we absolutely have to. This is being demanded of us by the CFO. And so there's a lot of anxiety over it in, we've got some interesting ways to help, but that's certainly growing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I know we've seen the trend too, you know, coming out of the pandemic. Some companies, but certainly there's been a trend of L&D budgets growing, sometimes other places shrinking. Mm-hmm. But whenever that budget grows, the scrutiny grows. So it makes sense that there's this pressure.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a pendulum swing. We saw L&D companies become very, very important during the pandemic.
Yep.
And what I'm seeing now is that staffs are being cut.
Yeah.
More conversations I have with different companies, I'm seeing more and more instances of people either leaving and not being replaced, or people actively separating from the company, or being separated from the company. I don't like to use the word fired,
because
that has sort of a military overtone, but we're seeing that. That's happening.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that we talked about, and honestly, we're just going to briefly touch on it because it's going to dovetail right into our trends for the new year. Personalized learning, learning paths, social learning. In a lot of ways, these are things that are going to keep going. I think trends that are ongoing because, I mean, gosh, we'll talk about this in a minute, but quiet quitting, right?
Yeah.
And upskilling and reskilling, all of those things beg for our employees, our learners want, they need something personal for them. They need the skills gap or the knowledge gap measured and materials made just for them.
Right.
Or they need to see a path where they can, you know, move in the company, grow into something new if they're going to stay at this company.
And you have that when the unemployment rate, at least in the United States and in many places of the world, is historically low. Your team members have an awful lot of options.
Mm.
They really, really do. And some of them will move for money.
Yeah.
Those are conversations that, you know, are really HR conversations. But others will move because they simply can't see a career path.
Yes, exactly.
And they will say, I'm hitting a ceiling here. I don't know where I'm going. Where will I be in 5 years? What does my path look like? And so having clear learning paths and clear career development paths is really tied into employee retention.
100%. And we hear that all the time when we hire.
Yep.
You know, I want to come here because at my old company, I didn't have this opportunity.
Right.
And then once you hire, you need to retain and you have to provide that. So, all right. Well, we're coming back to that. So put a pin in that. Another topic we discussed at length last year was immersive learning. We're not going to rehash that last year. What we're going to do is move that into our very first trend of 2023.
Okay.
Because I know even personally, like you mentioned, interest and demand, I think, is ratcheting up, as well as access and sort of the simplifying. And I'm not going to say it's simple because it's not, and I don't even understand all the software behind it. But immersive learning, and we did do several. If you, our listeners, are interested, we did episode 23 and 24, where we talked kind of at a high level and then a very specific level with one of our XR solution architects at Mindspring. So if you're interested in that, you can go back and listen. In this case, can we take a look at, like, what are you seeing this year compared to last year?
Yeah, we're on an adoption curve. Last year, we were 1 year earlier, right, which isn't saying a lot. But we have moved along. I don't know that you know, XR, AR, VR, augmented reality and virtual reality, for those of you who are not familiar, has become mainstream yet. But there is every sign that it is becoming mainstream. People are figuring out how to embed XR into e-learning. And it's relatively simple to do.
Right.
It's not nearly as hard as you might think, particularly, you know, QR codes and things that pop up and things that they can do. So I think that the demand is growing significantly when we look at sort of a compounded annual growth rate. It's in the double digits. I mean, it's in the 20% growth range year over year. That means 20%. Growth in the industry, so way more people are using it. The bleeding edge is still manufacturing and healthcare.
I was going to ask, what industries are you specifically?
But we recently did a project and are still sort of in the middle of it for an enormous retailer, and really doing XR scans of their entire facility.
Yeah,
and then training people in particular parts of particular stores how to do things. It's so much more efficient. One of our XR experts was telling me they took a 3,000-page manual for a particular three
wow.
work instructions.
Right. For, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And we have a platform, that we use to build out our XR experiences. And I think that all got, encapsulated and you could literally stand at the machine and see exactly what you were doing and what you needed to do next. It will both speak to you and you can visibly see it, and it overlays what's supposed to happen over the thing that you're actually looking at. So that's, it's just really in helpful. Time. And you imagine searching a 3,000-page manual, right? No. To find which way the belt is supposed to run here. It really is incredible. And I think part of the reason why it's being more and more adopted is because of the efficiency gains. Right?
Yeah. The 3,000-page manual right there. Is
right. But I think the CFOs are starting to see
yeah,
it. The CFOs
sure.
are starting to say, hey, look, we're seeing real gains here. We're seeing efficiency gains. Plus, we're back to employee retention.
Yeah.
If on your first day someone hands you a 3,000-page manual, you hand it back and say, thank you very much. I'm working at the wrong company.
Right.
Whereas they say, you know, here's your glasses or, you know, here's your XR headset. You're going to learn some really
go get
cool
started.
Stuff. And
you
literally, we're going to talk some safety stuff and you can go start right now.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit through 2 weeks of training.
Yeah.
For employee retention, and again, you can do the math on that. You can do the ROI on that and figure out if you're hiring, you know, 1,500 people a year, my goodness.
Yeah.
The other trend that's happening is that the cost of entry into XR is going down.
I wondered about that. It feels like it has for sure.
Yep. It's gotten cheaper. It's gotten easier. The tools have gotten better. The tool that we use, which is our very own platform, is no code. You're not hiring coders to do it. You can literally begin an XR experience with your cell phone by walking into a room and building assets over the top of it.
That's amazing.
It is. I'm not technically savvy. And when
I'm not going to make a comment on that.
Yeah,
you understand a lot.
You just keep your opinions to yourself there, Miriam. But the things that those guys are able to do are truly incredible. And it's not just what they're able to do, how quickly I'm able to do it.
I would agree. Well, I know personally, this has been kind of an initiative, a learning curve for you over this past year. And the stuff that you have picked up is amazing. I'm still working on it. And that speaks to the barriers to entry being just removed.
Yeah.
So much easier to use.
Remember, there was a story of somebody who created the first tablet for Apple.
Mm.
And he was out of the country somewhere. He was in a developing world country. And he left the tablet sitting there. And a 5-year-old child walked up and just started playing.
Right.
And immediately caught on. It was intuitive, right? Immediately caught on how to do it. And I believe it was a board member. I think it's in the Steve Jobs book. But it was like the board member of Apple said, okay, we have something here. If a child that quickly can adapt to this thing and start figuring it out, we're not quite there in XR, but we've gone very far down that road.
Yeah, this is one question that I was particularly, or one trend, I guess, excited to talk to you about, just because I know your journey over this past year, but, and maybe it's just because I'm closer now to it as well, but last year it felt kind of big and overwhelming, and I could sort of give some broad definition, but I just didn't understand really.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the barrier to entry has dropped, and just off the top of my head, being able to think of examples and where it's being used speaks to more of its
and the use
industry
cases,
use.
It's just the use cases. Wayfinding,
you
know, just helping people find their way in a hospital, giving people tours. So you're a new employee and you need to tour this giant factory and you don't need anybody to lead you. As a matter of fact, as you're walking along, your guides will pop up on your phone or on your tablet and they'll talk to you and they'll tell you a history. You know, retail store or your factory floor can become the equivalent of a really great museum, right? Where you used to have to go put on the headphones and, right, you'd have to tune into a specific radio station or something, right?
Now you're dating yourself.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I mean, literally now you have an expert guide.
Yep.
And that expert capture is a feature that's phenomenal, which is you take the person that's been at the job
Yeah.
for 30 years, and you have them put on or even use a GoPro, but or put on a glass with a camera on it. Talk through the process. You have captured all of that expert's knowledge, and you can transfer that immediately into an XR experience, mm-hmm. so that that person can be incredibly helpful to you, even though that person might not be there anymore.
No, and just thinking back to your wayfinding comments too, that that speaks to employee experience and even mm-hmm. retention. There's still one story at, you know, back in the day at our company just made me so sad. We're small. We're just getting started. I think we were like 3 weeks in, and a new hire was like, can I get a writing utensil? You know, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, you know, and most of us just threw something in our bag from home, but we were small and, you know, and I've heard the same story at big companies where it's like, people just can't find the bathroom.
Bathrooms is a big deal.
Right. And so that whole wayfinding and being able to explore on your own without fear of embarrassment.
Yeah.
You know, this maybe I need to find this area because it's important to me. Other people don't care, but yeah.
Hospitals were a good example. Yeah. Like, you know, somebody has a baby. Where's the nursery? Yeah. Where's the restroom? How do you get to the canteen, you know, area? All those things are you don't need you don't need to ask a person. It's right on your phone, and you can be led right there by the software. And it's all of this is a little on the edge of creepy. And I know we're going to talk about AI, and then it's going to get really creepy. But it is there are way more uses than there were. People are seeing applications. Mm-hmm. The cost of it is coming down, and the technology is getting simpler. Those three factors say that XR has an enormous future in learning, training, and development.
Yeah, I know, and that's actually a great spot to end on, because I think that really sums up where we are with that trend for this year. Mm-hmm. I think I'm very interested to see what the next year holds, but mm-hmm. the implementation is becoming much, much easier mm-hmm. because of that cost. And so it's exciting to see, and I'm excited to see use cases. So, and hopefully people will be able to find their bathrooms and all those other things. Yeah. We don't have those situations anymore.
Bare necessities.
That's right. All right. Well, another big trend, and I kind of have this overarching trend with sort of a couple related to it. I mean, if you're in the learning and development industry, if your eyes are open at all and mm-hmm. your ears, you've heard and read upskilling, reskilling mm-hmm. probably a million times this year. So I think the pandemic really helped mm-hmm. business leaders understand that, first of all, the current skills of my employees might not be enough for the future. Then we add that to the whole issue of hiring and, you know, people like the job market being what it is mm-hmm. and trying to retain employees. It's so much more cost effective to keep an employee mm-hmm. and upskill or even completely reskill them than it is to try and hire on board and like start mm-hmm. from scratch to get going. And I know like the LinkedIn Learning Report for this year said that skills for the same occupation from like 2015 to 2021, so mm-hmm. 6 years roughly, changed about 25%. Mm-hmm. But then they estimate that by 2025, which is now just mm-hmm. 2 years away, those might change again by almost 40%.
It's Industry 4.0.
Yeah, it's a little terrifying if you're in the world that way.
The integration of technology into literally everything from retail shops. You know, you're looking at very, very large food chains that are automating things. The people that remain have to be pretty technically savvy. And so I just read an article yesterday or the day before about there's a young guy at Ivy League school and has kind of stumbled on a question that's the answer to a question that's really hard to answer, which is there are about 2.5 million people missing from the workforce in the United States. Where'd they go?
Yeah.
And he and a small team are doing a really cool project trying to figure out why did they quit, and the reasons are abundant, right? Some of the reasons are the technology has gotten past me. I didn't feel valued. I wasn't paid enough. Some new habits began
in
COVID that really weren't perhaps such good habits.
Right.
But there is a block of 2.5 million people that have not. That ought to be, by definition, in the workforce that are not. And so where that leaves us is competition. Mm-hmm. And upskilling, if you think of upskilling from just the perspective of the company, you're missing the other half of the story. The company needs that person to be upskilled, but the person themselves, the person wants to be upskilled as well.
Right.
Because they want a promotion inside
right.
the company, or they want to be yep. more marketable, or they want to learn new skills. So you have two pressure points coming at upskilling. Both the company is requiring it because of technological advances, because things are moving faster, right? And also people saying, well, if you're going to retain me, we're sort of back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
You need to give me a path to a higher skill set. My higher skill set, and the thing is, it's personal, right? My
it
higher
is
skill
personal.
Set is gonna lead to a higher wage, and my higher wage is going to allow me to do better things for myself and my family and my community. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff tied into upskilling.
Yeah, and kind of a second related trend to that is that upskilling and reskilling seems very overwhelming to a company mm-hmm. because it is so personal. Like, I have to determine gaps
right.
for 50,000 people. How am I going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, we go back to those essential questions,
yeah.
right, that you and I talk about. We're in the middle of a conversation about consulting services right now. But, you know, figuring out how to curriculum map, figuring out where are the gaps in your curriculum, trying to figure out who are my learners.
Who are the learners
and
now?
And what
yeah.
do they really want?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what they want is upskilling because it's an opportunity to a higher position and, honestly, financially, a better life.
Yeah.
And hooray for that.
Absolutely. And I think that speaks to this trend of, like, data-driven learning, which I'm not going to say is 100% related to upskilling, but mm-hmm. it can make upskilling or reskilling easier because if I can determine the data mm-hmm. points and the knowledge and the skills or the beliefs that any individual doesn't have or still needs to have, mm-hmm. I can help them, move them right. along. Also, if I can determine what they do know, they're in a unique position to help those around them.
Right.
So all of that's just massive data sets of information
it
and
is.
Knowing how to interpret it and what does it really mean.
Yep.
That's a lot.
And you need math models for that,
yep.
and you need technology for that. But the math models exist, and so does the tech.
Yeah.
So you really can dive pretty deep
yeah.
In ways that simply weren't even close to possible 10 years ago, certainly, but even 5 years ago.
No, right.
Yep.
Well, and a last, just a little tangential one, I think, to upskilling mm-hmm. and reskilling. We're seeing an increasing request for leadership training, and mm-hmm. that's at all levels. That's the first person, you know, first week of they're walking in and onboarding.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much that they aspire to be CEO tomorrow, but they need to see that path. And then we have a group of younger hires maybe who are aspiring to that first leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about my C-suite or just a notch even below them who see this changing and evolving world? How in the world do I lead in
right.
the middle of all of this change?
Yeah. Yep. And the companies have an enormous need for Leah, again, it's the two prongs, right? The companies, the people want many, some people say, I want to work my job. I want to go home. I don't want to lead anything. Leave me out of it.
Right, right.
That's not the entire right. population, of course. There are many people that have ambition. They want to grow. They want to learn. They want to lead.
Yep.
But the company needs them. So you wanted to date me. That's the wrong thing to say. Let me start over with that one, Jess. You were giving some, you're teasing me a little bit before about my age. I am the actual last year of the baby boomers.
Mm, okay.
So
yep.
I was born
right.
46 to 64. I'm born in 64. The amount of knowledge, leadership knowledge that walks out of the company or the firm every single year, right? And some of us are retiring earlier than normal retirement age, previously normal retirement ages. That is a scary, scary mm-hmm. thing. And so, again, you have two pressures. You have the pressure of people wanting a select few, wanting to be in positions of leadership. And you have this massive need, which is growing every single year.
Yes.
Along with that skill of leadership, the set of the knowledge set that you need to do it, the personality
yeah.
type,
yeah.
the you know, skills that you've developed over a lifetime of learning how to be a leader, those are leaving. And so companies have a huge gap in leadership. And again, I can tell you, I'm sure if I look back in the last 5 or 6 weeks, I'm sure I've been on more than a dozen calls with Fortune 500 companies that are saying, it's not just how do we do leadership, it's a little bit back into ROI and measurement metrics, but how do we actually measure that this is working? How do we know this is actually, our leaders are progressing? How can we track that?
How can we measure behavior change?
And you know, it's not a short term thing.
No, it's not
like making a line run more efficient in three weeks, right? You have to take a long view, but it's tricky to do. And the problem is things that take a long time to show results take a long time to show results. And you don't know if you're doing it right.
And have a tendency to get scrapped quickly, unfortunately.
That need to develop. And I think AR, VR plays an enormous role in
absolutely.
It. I really do. There's all sorts of scenarios that you can put people in and they have to make choices, right? It's sort of like a living decision tree. And it's so fun. It's so fun because all the anxiety, if you're just checking boxes on a piece of paper about what you would choose to do versus working with an interactive, XR generated person that's going to respond to you in preset ways, that's pretty remarkable.
Well, and you answered with that. One thing I was just going to bring up too is that not only do we have leadership leaving the company, but even if they're not leaving, we have this whole total shift of remote, some remote, some not, some hybrid. And so even if I wanted to, I mean, how many times do we say like more things are caught than taught, right? Mm-hmm. People learn leadership often by watching good leaders.
Modeled.
And now I'm sitting at home in my home office and I'm not saying obviously there's things that you can still learn and follow via communication, you know, emails, call, virtual calls, but it's a whole different world, and that VR, you know, immersive experience really helps with that.
It does. It's hard to catch remotely.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yep. No matter what you do, it's still difficult. Yeah. Well, I think as I was sort of preparing for this podcast, kind of pulling these trends together, one thing that became clear to me, this is not a new trend, right? But content is king, meaning I need to upskill and reskill. That's all kind of individualized content. Depending on the learner, trying to provide leadership training for people in different positions. Even if I'm using AI to drive like this new content and skills and all of that, it still requires that content is available. And I think that that's another huge and ongoing trend. Where do we get this content from? How do we determine it's good? How is it going to meet my needs? And so there's a few things related to this, right? Like one, super simple, but micro learning. Like, why not repurpose what we already have? But long, long gone are the days of the 60-minute e-learning module. At least I hope they're gone.
We still see them occasionally. Like, I have the 73-minute one. Nope. I don't need to hear anything after 73 minutes. You need to stop right there because that's not going to work.
Exactly. But I think, so that's just, that's like a super simple instructional design, really, principle.
You're still, right, the content of good leadership training. Still the content of good.
Yes, correct.
The content of good industrial design, the content of good learning how to, the steps and 13 steps involved in this particular activity. The content is the content. And learning design and instructional design is still good instructional design that takes into consideration the entire person and how the brain functions and how we interact and social learning and psychology and sociology and all those factors. None of those things have gone away. So the content is still there. Learning science is still there. Really what we're talking about is it has been delivery method.
Yes.
It has been delivery method. What's changing is content creation on the AI side.
Yes. Yeah, let's just go right to that.
Yeah.
Because that's a big topic.
It is. I will tell you what's changed in the last year by what I'm reading and listening to.
Yeah.
So a year ago, I was listening to and reading books on the history of AI, which was fascinating, where it came from and sort of the, you know, how machine learning came about, and then they're divided up into camps of this. These guys think algorithms are the only way to go, and these people over here think, no, the machine can teach itself. And so I was looking at history.
Watching the Terminator? I'm kidding.
Yeah, you don't want to watch that too many times. And you do get thinking about those questions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
But then, I mean, these giant leaps of technology.
Yes. Even in just the past couple of months or
less. Just giant leaps. Not like, you know, this thing's going to get incrementally 10% better every year. It's just leaps and bounds from multiple places, from multiple pieces of software, multiple platforms, and it's impacting the world of art.
Yeah.
It's impacting literature. It's impacting education. It's impacting corporate. There are very few places that I can think of. There is a brewery I read about that had AI create a recipe for their beer, and they've just released AI-built beer.
Interesting. Okay.
Right? And so AI-designed homes, AI-designed cars. Where this is going, but again, a year ago I was reading about the history.
I was
looking backwards and thinking, hi, I wonder what the future is going to bring. I feel like right now we're like right on the edge of – it's like the event horizon, right? We're right at the edge of something, and it's going so much faster than it, almost faster than the internet revolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of a sudden, this is just exploding in a matter of weeks. And you know, I saw a thing the other day. I was looking at a piece of software the other day where you read a couple of sentences into it and then feed it a script, and it'll match your voice, it'll match your emotion. So pretty soon, Miriam, these podcasts will all be generated by AI. No, we'll throw a couple ideas in, and that'll be that.
Mm-hmm.
But I read an interview between AI and AI-generated Steve Jobs, which was crazy. You can read a few sentences in, and you can narrate and then feed it an entire book, and it'll read that book for you out loud in your own voice with your own cadence and your own emotional ups and downs.
So stay tuned for a brand new podcast.
Well, voiceover,
yeah,
right?
I know, voiceover's going away.
So just think about our industry. Yeah. Voiceover is going away.
Yeah.
You still need smart people.
Yes.
You still need, because there can be a garbage in, garbage out factor.
Yes, and we've seen that. I can tell up until recently when I'm reading something that was AI generated.
Yeah.
It's not great.
But you can't now.
I know.
Let me say this. It's getting harder. I read an article a few days ago about another Ivy League young guy that has created software that will tell you when it's AI generated.
Oh, interesting.
And it's really for professors and teachers because they can't tell.
Yeah.
So there's this thing making it so you can't tell, and there's other people trying to figure out how you can't. It's fascinating to watch. But this flywheel, again, a year ago, the flywheel was sort of moving. There were cool AI things, all right? There's lots of AI.
Yeah.
But the speed at which this flywheel is moving right now is truly remarkable.
No, that's one of the reasons I really wanted to spend a little time here. And I think I wanted to focus some even on like just in our industry.
Yeah.
Because it's been just a couple months that like our learning team, they're using one specific, you know, and it doesn't matter. We're not like paid endorsers for any, but that focuses more on writing.
Yeah.
And initially they were using it to sort of aggregate, like we get all this source content from a client, aggregate it, kind of organize it, put it in an outline, and then let good learning experience designers take it from there.
Right.
So great. And I mean, we should address, obviously there's fear, right? You're going to lose your job to AI. It's kind of a ubiquitous quote. It's out there all over now, but it's, you're not going to lose your job to AI. You're going to lose your job to someone who's using AI.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a smart thing. If you're not going to embrace it.
It's going to run over you.
Right. Well, and our instructional designers, once they thought about it, they're like, actually, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't have to read through that silly 3,000 page manual.
Right.
I can let AI do the bulk of the work. Now, I look at the outline. I apply the knowledge I do have to organize that in a way that makes more sense for a learning experience.
Yep. But same thing with AI generated animations.
Yeah.
Same thing with AI. So our family has this tradition at Christmas. You know this.
Yes.
We all get a name and we all have to write poems for each other. And we immediately.
You guys are vastly creative and impressive.
Well, sometimes there's songs. There was a rap this year.
Oh,
it was pretty cool. Yeah. But we had to outlaw AI generated poems.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to put your heart and soul into
this.
That's
right.
But no one really would have known, truthfully.
Right.
No one. I did have AI generate. I was assigned our oldest son, James, and I did have AI generate a poem for
just
him.
To see what it
and then
like.
I sent it around to everybody, and they're like, "Wait, you didn't write that?"
Right.
I said, "Nope, I didn't." Mine always ends up sounding like Dr. Seuss.
Okay.
But you know, between video, I mean, that's the other thing. We can take a handful of photographs of your face. Then we match, that face will move, it'll match the words. We can take your voice with a couple of sentences and mask your voice over the top of it. You think about it, you can have an AI-generated script read by an AI-generated voice, which is you, and the visual is an AI physical representation of your face. So it's you, not you.
Right.
It's your voice, not your voice.
Right.
And it's your words, not your words.
Yep. And you're just putting...
Yeah. Those are great tools, right? For learning people, those are great tools, but
There's definitely some...
There's an anthropological question
there's
here.
There's issues there, for sure.
Yeah.
But I even think, like, I was doing some research with this, and just to speak to the speed they were talking about, I kind of referenced our learning team. That was a couple months ago. Just aggregating source content.
Yeah.
Now...
It's all different.
It's the opportunity, like... It can actually identify gaps in a storyboard. Like, did you miss some key content? It can, I can't tell you how many times we have some sort of internal discussions and people say, hey, I'm really stuck. Like, I need some ideas. Mm-hmm. And I love that group brainstorming and that group think is not going to go away or brainstorming concepts, but it can generate a series of ideas for you. Mm-hmm. It can even, like, one of the things is we often get, we did this huge presentation. You know, it was a 3-day event. We need you to take all the content from that. Well, now, I mean, it can take audio and video and all of that and aggregate it for you.
There's also an AI now that makes PowerPoint presentations.
So it
will create your entire presentation and voice it over if you want.
Yeah, it's, I think the speed.
Throw in a hologram, you don't even need to be there.
That's right, you don't, I know.
Yeah.
But I can think of very legitimate learning purposes too, where
Absolutely.
It makes sense to have, you want a certain, how many times have we talked about how hard it is to get, like you want the CEO of the company to make a video for you for onboarding, getting their time, and then it's going to change by next year. Now you got to record it again. Mm-hmm. Creating something like this, where you said you've got their video and you've got, you can just rewrite it every year and use them. Now again, there are a few questions related to that. They might not even know the words you're putting in their mouth. But.
Yeah, this sounds a little Soviet Union circa 1950s.
It does.
But yeah.
So stay tuned for more about AI. I mean, it's a huge,
It's like any tool. I forget the philosopher, it might have been Schumpeter, but he described economics basically as creative destruction. So it allows you to be incredibly creative, but as you're creative, you're destroying what's inefficient and ineffective.
Right.
This is AI.
It's true. Absolutely.
And it's going to be creative destruction. Right. There's going to be a wildly cool creative part of it. And some people are going to figure that out and excel at it. And other people that don't embrace it, as you said, are going to get left behind.
Yeah.
And fast.
Unfortunately. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So I guess even just my word of advice is, no matter how scary it sounds, like, don't be afraid of it. Mm-mm. Be afraid of the person that's using it. Like, learn, you know, in your industry and whatever ways you can to try and embrace it. Just find out a little bit about it. Or, you know, and we don't need to kind of, underneath content is king. We have some other concepts, right? Like having other users in your company generate content, outsource. Like,
absolutely.
There's all kinds of ways to create more content. And if AI in particular is something you're interested in, and it is scary to you, well, you don't have to stop there. Like, maybe that's an opportunity to outsource, to find somebody that does know how to use it, learn from them, And slowly, and that's kind of the way it's been on our learning team. I know. Yep. It's, hey, can you check this out? Let's have a handful of people look at it. What do we think? What worked? Yeah. What didn't work?
And that's a fun part of my job is every now and then I sort of throw a hand grenade over the fence and go, have you guys seen this? You know, have you tried it? Have you played with it? And I'm up early every day, and this is primarily what I'm doing, is just, you know, looking around at industry trends, looking around at new technology. And the new technology is pretty much encapsulated all the industry trends right now.
It really has, absolutely. Yeah, I've opened my email to a few hand grenades every now and then, Jerry.
Yeah, well, and some of them are great, you know, and some of them just are duds, and that's the way I can't be held accountable for these things.
Well, it's a fun spot to be in, right? To think about them and then determine what's working and what's not.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this has been such an interesting conversation. I don't know if you have any closing remarks or if you...
Usually you ask me about what I'm reading right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't, but I would be happy to. What are you learning well right now, Jerry?
Oh, I'm reading the most fascinating book.
All right. Tell us.
It's called The Violinist's Thumb.
Huh.
And it's the story of understanding human DNA.
Mm.
And so the title comes from this guy who was a crazy good violinist, had super flexible fingers, which was actually part of a disease that eventually took his life. But for a while, he was a world-renowned virtuoso because of his DNA. And this is like, you know, how chromosomes were developed. The name of it is The Violinist's Thumb. It's by the same author, some of you might know, of The Disappearing Spoon, which is the history of chemistry.
Okay.
And he writes in a really interesting way. So
yeah.
I'm learning all about Miriam, why you are the way you are, nature versus nurture, turns out. It's mostly nature.
I would love to know someday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Oh, that's really, I didn't ask because we're just doing all these trends. I figured that kind of spoke to what you were studying, but turns out I was wrong.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you. I actually will have to check that out. It sounds really interesting.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and insight, too. Like, I know our listeners appreciate it, and we're looking forward, as always, to where the year takes us.
And if any of the listeners ever want to have a conversation, I'm sure there's a way for them in the show notes or whatever to get a hold of you or me or whatever. These are conversations I'm absolutely fascinated by.
Yeah, we will be linking to both articles we reference in the show notes, but also this is always, when this comes out, it's always on LinkedIn in particular. Yep. I mean, it's other social media as well, but I think that would be probably the easiest ways for our listeners to go ahead and share with us. What are you interested in? What do you think is coming in the next year? So I do really appreciate all of you listening. We know your time is a gift. We appreciate you spending it with us, and we're looking forward to kicking off 2023 in an exciting way. So again, we appreciate you listening today, and we look forward to further conversation.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.